Welcome to French Kissing Life. I'm your host, Shauna Stiver, and I am thrilled to help you discover what makes your heart race, your soul dance, and your spirit soar. Every week, you'll get a fun dose of inspiration, laughter, and a sprinkle of magic as we explore stories, insights, and conversations that empower you to ignite the spark within. In a world that demands you be anything but yourself, this is your permission slip to be a little more you. Together, let's shed the shoulds, embrace our unique brilliance, and welcome more joy. Are you ready to French kiss life? Welcome back to another episode of French Kissing Life. I am your host, Shauna Stiver, and I have a serious question to ask you. Have you ever met someone that you just instantly loved? Like instantly? Like genuinely thought, wow, were we separated at birth? That is exactly what happened with today's guest. When I saw that Jennifer was a people first operations guru and, quote, rebelliously kind, I knew I had to meet her. So we set up a coffee chat that was supposed to be for 30 minutes and talked for an hour and a half. And I feel like we could have kept going that day. Needless to say, we were two peas in a podcast and I knew she had to come on the show. How's this for an intro? Jennifer Yates is a beauty school dropout, former tractor driver, played bass in a punk rock band, and is a four-time founder and co-founder. She isn't new to business ownership or its successes and failures. Her first business, a retail boutique, received an award for best business in the state of Michigan and got national coverage in Elle Girl magazine, but it never turned a profit and ultimately closed. She clawed her way out of a six-digit personal debt on a small salary, then went on to co-found an interactive arts fair that ran for years and paid for itself. Jennifer also had a 27-year career in quote-unquote corporate. At Pitney Bowes, she led projects from $100,000 to $16 million for household names like MasterCard, FedEx, and REI. She earned a Global Leadership Award for innovation. After Pitney, she was the VP of Business Operations at Sedai Capital. There, her focus was on elevating people, helping them shine in their expertise, and making the business run smoother. That lit her up. And it made her realize that she wanted to have a one-to-many effect, so she went on her own again. She's currently the founder of Rue, a business operations practice centered around humans and the way they work. She helps teams kick ass. They're happy. Leaders are happy. Business thrives. She's wildly perceptive, rebelliously kind, and a general goofy goo who believes more in soft skills than certifications. Woof! Am I right? The only problem with having Jennifer on was how to narrow down what in the hell we'd talk about. One of the things that she had shared with me in an earlier conversation that I found specifically compelling is that she has, quote unquote, built and failed abundantly. I felt like that was the perfect in for us. And boy, was I right. We got into such a great conversation that we couldn't stop. Not a big shocker. And so this will be a two-part episode on failure. I do want to take a quick second to acknowledge that I am not a trauma-informed interviewer, nor am I trained in anything related to significant trauma. So I'll add a small trigger warning for anyone sensitive to topics related to depression, anxiety, or desperation. More specifically, in this episode, we talk about what your relationship to failure is and how you might be able to reframe it, what we can all learn from failure, and how to live bravely one small step at a time. Jennifer is such a hoot. She's a self-proclaimed podcast whore. She has the best energy on the earth, and I simply adore her. So please enjoy part one of my conversation with Jennifer Yates. Hey, Jennifer. Thanks so much for being on French Kissing Life. It's good to see you again.
You too. I'm so excited to be here. I have to stand so that, you know, like I can't even sit down. That's how excited I am.
Hey, I love that kind of energy. You know this about me. We got connected so serendipitously and then discovered that we are two peas in a pod and match each other's crazy energy, which is not something that you find with everybody.
I know. And we keep learning new things. Like, we are both storytellers. We learned very recently that we write similarly to each other and how we speak. It's just kind of mind-blowing, but I love it.
I know. I know. Me too. Well, tell everybody who you are and sort of like why we would get connected. Because when I ran across your profile, I was like, she's the perfect person to have on the show. And I just want everybody to like get to experience your energy.
Okay. My name's Jennifer Yates. We'll start there. And I have a company called Roux. That's R-O-U-X, not like a kangaroo, but roux, like flour and fat mixed together and, you know, the base for thickening and cohesiveness. And it results in all things wonderful to eat. Gravy happens to be my favorite food of all time. It makes the world better. So what I usually like to start with is the appendix to my story, because it's way more interesting than like the standard professional corporate story. So my appendix is, I am a beauty school dropout. I drove tractors on my family's Louisiana rice farm. By the way, rice is also one of my favorite foods. I am a former DJ on my college radio station. I did voiceover work in college as my little side job. I played bass in a punk rock band, played bass and screamed. And I owned a retail store, a boutique. I co-founded an interactive arts fair. And I spoke at Governor Jennifer Granholm's Cool Cities Conference back in the early 2000s, because I was seen as someone who promoted the Cool Cities movement, which we can get into later. I guess that's the appendix. So my...
You left out one important component, which is you are also a self-proclaimed podcast whore.
I sure am. I am a... That I did leave out. Oh my gosh. I am a podcast whore. I devour podcasts. I love them. I've listened to them since way early days. Like, yeah. This is in the aughts, 2000 aughts, like 08, 07, I think is when I started listening to them. And I've just been a fan ever since. I listen to all kinds. I am fickle. I will binge some, then get sort of tired of them and take a break and go to others. But yes, and it's a combination. My favorites are basically podcasts where I learn about other people, I learn about other places, or I just learn something new. I tend to really be fascinated with some of the darker topics. So I'll listen to murdery true crime podcasts like I know a lot of people do. But I also listen to a lot of business podcasts and fun podcasts where there's interviews with interesting people. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you are a podcast host yourself, which sort of harkens to your radio DJ days.
Yeah, that's yes. So I am a podcast co-host. This is a story. Can I?
Of course.
Both storytellers.
Of course.
20 years ago, when I owned my retail boutique, there was a local screen printer in town, and I had that screen printing shop print all of my branded merchandise. So if it was t-shirts or bumper stickers or whatever, I sent all of my merch their way. They printed it and, you know, returned it. So the owner of that screen printing shop would drop by to deliver items, or if he was delivering items nearby, he would stop in my store. And we always went down these business rabbit holes. We had a ton to talk about, and we just had great conversations. So he sold his screen printing shop, moved to California, fast forward 20 years, and I post on LinkedIn that a year ago, like, hey, I'm going into business for myself, blah, 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 blah. He reached out and he's like, oh my God, you're in business for yourself again. We need to talk. And when we had our meeting, he was outfitted with headphones and a microphone. And I was like, are you podcasting? And he said, no, but I've always wanted to. And I said, me too. And he's like, let's podcast together. And I was like, okay, what are we going to talk about? Well, after he sold his screen printing shop, he opened a fulfillment warehouse. So in the supply chain world, he was storing orders and merchandise and fulfilling those orders. So he got into that space and he said, why don't we do a podcast about e-commerce? And I was like, okay, what does that mean? Uh-huh. And, you know, because commerce, I had a retail store. I had an online store back then. That's like mid-aughts, so 2005-ish. But e-commerce today is so, so different. Mm-hmm. So he said, well, what I'm thinking is we can place orders online, talk about the shopping experience, look at the tools behind the e-commerce website, have the product shipped to us, track the products through their logistics journey or their shipping journey, analyze the packaging outside and inside, and stop at the product. Like, we won't do a product review. And I was like, mm-hmm. okay, this sounds a little boring. But we decided to go ahead. I was like, this isn't my space, so why would I be a part of it? And he's like, mm-hmm. well, what you do now, and I never even got to that, I'm a business operations person. So, and yes, we can cover that in a bit. But he said, you just understand business and you ask really good questions and you're analytical. So you can contribute kind of the outside perspective to this inside look at e-commerce. And I thought, oh, okay. So we decided to record a few episodes. And I don't know if this is your experience or not in your own podcast, but we recorded several episodes before we decided to release them. We wanted to get the feel of what it was like, understand if this is something we wanted to do. And so we recorded starting, I think, around June, and we didn't release our first episode until early November 2023.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we really wanted to see if this was something that we could keep up with, that we were enjoying. And so now we've released, and it's our podcast is, I joke around, like, I tell my friends, my family, don't listen. I have never looked so hard at a shipping label in my entire life. But everyone who's listened lets me know, like, this is so interesting and fascinating. I learn a lot every time I listen, because what we do is we pick a brand. We've ordered from Patagonia, we've ordered from Bombas, we've ordered from Macy's and Bloomingdale's, and then we totally analyze the back end. But we always get a little off topic and go down kind of some rabbit holes, whether it's business or community or trust. There always seems to be a theme. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, podcasting is so much fun. I like did not realize how much I would enjoy it. I mean, I kind of had a feeling that, you know, because I've been wanting to do this for so long, but I think I was not prepared for the amount of joy that it brings me to like have the conversations and then, you know, put them out into the world and have people comment and say like, oh, I really enjoyed this, or like, this is so good. It's like, oh, wow. Okay. Like, thank you. That's really like affirming. But for me, it's like, I just get to play around and have conversations, which is like two of my favorite things to do.
Exactly. It's really about the core, I think, of who we both are, which is human connection. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether I mean, I find the guest focused podcast to be really interesting rather than just someone by themselves speaking, although some of those are interesting as well. But the guest and the interaction and the spontaneity, like scripted podcasts, do not work in my ears. Like, yeah. I want it to be really spontaneous and genuine. And yeah, it's a new method of connecting with people. And that's actually it's kind of how we connected.
Yes.
You reached out to me and because you found me. And
yeah, we have mutual friends in business circles. And I saw you had comment on somebody. And so then I went to your profile and I noticed that you were very much a like people first leader. And that really like resonates with me big time, because that's like, I believe in, you know, like we need to be better to each other in business and in life. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I have to have her on the show. And then we, you know, had a 30-minute coffee chat scheduled. We talked for an hour and a half. And so I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be fantastic. Our challenge was trying to figure out how, like what we were going to nail down as our topic for today. So, but yeah, I was very, very intrigued by the work that you were doing and that with that lens of being like human-centered.
Yeah. And when we spoke for the first time, I mean, it was like instant. I was mm-hmm. like, I love her. And I'm going to tell you something. When I listen to your podcast, either when you're talking to a guest or when you're doing your solo, you know, your solo bits, there is a little chuckle that you like. I don't know. I can't imitate it, but you'll insert a little chuckle when you make yourself laugh. And that little chuckle brings me so much joy in my ears.
Yeah.
And I just want to make sure you know that. I love it.
So thank you. Yeah. Well, I have a friend that has said that before about, because I'll send her voice notes and she's like, oh my God, your little laugh when you're laughing at yourself is so funny. And it makes her like laugh even more.
I want to show you something you can't see because my headphones are covering it. Mm-hmm. What earrings are you wearing?
Oh my God, they're like the same.
Oh, how did that happen?
This is what I mean. We're on the same wavelength.
I know. Are yours kind of like, they're Indian-ish or, you know, like a, kind of a motif?
Yeah.
Like East India.
Yeah. Well, I mean, mine are a Kohl's specialty.
I don't know where mine came from. They were a gift. So they're probably a Kohl's specialty as well. Yeah. But oh my God, how weird.
I know. This is what happens. We just get going and then we're like, God, were we like separated at birth or something?
We may have been.
Okay. So tell everybody like what you're doing now with your work, because I do think that like the human focus is such a important facet. And I think that it's sometimes can be a little buzzwordish, but it's also just so, I just want like these businesses and stuff to like keep on this path, because I feel like we're starting to take steps toward that, like being a focus and a commitment. But Yeah, I would really love to see like more people doing what you're doing and, you know, helping to infuse that in business.
Yeah. And it is a buzzword right now. And I see it more and more, but I guess the proof is in the pudding, you know, if companies actually practice it. Truthfully, I do not know any other way to operate. So
yeah,
my company, I say that it is a human first business operations practice for better for us businesses. What I mean by that is most people, when they hear the words business operations or the word operations by itself, they immediately go to, oh, systems, process, tools. That's what you do. Yeah, no. Actually, all of that kind of, it doesn't scare me a little bit. It's that I push it to the side because I can't even think about that first. I believe operations is about going where the work lives, which is with the people. I have to understand their strengths, their motivations, their preferences, their work styles. What do they believe is working in their world and what isn't working in their world? I cannot even think about a process or a system or a tool until I understand the people. And I guess that comes from my management of teams in my previous life. I managed teams of software developers. I managed teams of statisticians. I've managed teams. And what I always felt was, why am I going to put a prescription on a team or a person when it may not work for them? It's almost like if you think about a doctor or anyone, mm-hmm. like you can come and say, I don't feel right. They're going to get to what is wrong with your individual body and what is right with your individual body. That's a similar approach that I take with my work. I get to the people. The next thing I do is I have to understand the industry if it's an industry I've never worked with before. So what projects are you working on? Tell me about, you know, your clients, the types of projects. Are they, you know, kind of perpetual? Do you have deliveries? So anyway, I get in there and analyze the people, the work itself. And then I speak to the leaders as well. Like, what are your visions? Where do you think the disconnect is? And because I'm speaking and to the people first and understanding the work itself, it's almost like I'm doing a survey of the entire business landscape. Then I can understand, where are the gaps? What is working? I do take a systems approach. Like, I'm not going to tell you to fix something that doesn't need fixing, but I am going to point out gaps or problems or places to fix. But
yeah. And like, I mean, it just seems like a no-brainer that you would want people to work in the way that they are best able to perform. Like, it's not rocket science, but yet, you know, there's all these ways of sort of, you know, putting the round peg in the square hole. And that's just very much like been a way that they do things.
It is. It exactly is. So like, I come from a long history in software and tech and data. And I've worked for huge corporations who, you know, really emphasized like certification and project management. Oh, hey, Jennifer, you're one of our project managers. This was, oh my gosh, like almost 15 years ago. We'll pay for you to get certified in as a project manager, you know, professional, PMP. And I said no. And the reason I said no is because I knew that that certification was biased on all the wrong variables. It was biased on paperwork. It was biased on memorization, and it was biased on test taking. Those weren't my skills as a project manager. My skills as a project manager was understanding the people, understanding the work, and helping people to feel empowered in their own expertise. What do you think about this problem, teammate? When do you think you can deliver this thing, teammate? And so I was very well respected in my organization and promoted regularly because I was effective, and I was effective because I worked with people. I didn't create a project fucking manifesto. I did, you know what I mean? Or whatever else, you know, it, like a, you know, this or that paperwork. I wasn't a test, you know, memorizing things that you have to memorize and taking a test. I worked with people and kind of, I used to say I'm a benevolent Pied Piper. Like, I just bring people along with me, but not to drown in the water, but to really be elevate. I'm a cheerleader. I'm a giver. I'm a supporter. I'm a mentor. And I let people shine in their expertise because I want that for them. And that's really important to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where, when I saw that that's what you do and what you champion, of course, that the correlation to be a guest on the show is a no-brainer, because, you know, we're all about like giving people permission to be more them in whatever situation that they're in.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And and being very perceptive with people too, like just kind of seeing, watching and seeing like, oh, this one's strengths are not in meeting deadlines. Their strength is more in ideation and like thinking of big next things. Am I going to stick them in hardcore deadline-driven places? Absolutely not. They need to be in a different area. Or there are some people that are like very to-do list focused. Are you going to then put them in a strategic visionary position where they have to think about the next thing? No, you're going to give them a to-do list because that's what they love. And you know that when you give them a to-do list or a task list, you can, it's like give it and forget about it. They're going to execute on that and get it done in the right way with minimal errors or mistakes. And you can, you know, they're extremely reliable in that space. So it's not just understanding the people and what they tell you, and but it's kind of understanding what they do without them telling you what they need or love. And so you you have to be perceptive, you have to be kind, you have to be giving and supportive. And then that, like, then people get comfortable and really happy because they are shining in their expertise. And I'm going to say one more thing. I feel you chomping at the bit, but the thing is when employees and teammates are happy, they are more productive and they do better work. And when happy, more productive, better working people are on the team, guess what happens? The business is better for it. The founders are better for it. So it's like all around winning, but there are so many people in the business world who want to force fit a process or a tool, and then they wonder why no one's using it.
Yeah. You have to start with the people.
So
I'm chuckling over chomping at the bit. It's just that I want to get to your failures, which I joked with you.
Yeah.
we landed on failure as our angle for this. And I said, okay, well, now let's go through all of your failures. Like, let's preface it that way, which I'm kidding. But I told you there's something wildly inspiring and just empowering about all the risks and gambles that you have taken. And so I really wanted to, you know, dig into some of that and get your perspective on that, because I think we have there's just such a negative connotation with failure or, you know, things not working out the way that you thought they would or hoped they would. And I would love that at the end of our conversation, people can maybe think about this differently.
So I am not, even though I'm energetic and positive, I have had plenty of failures and I'm very open and willing to talk about them. The thing is that and I know failure is challenging. It's devastating in the moment. You're crushed. You don't see a way out oftentimes. And it's just, you know, it can be also very heartbreaking. So mm-hmm. I want to acknowledge that, but I don't know if it's in my DNA or what, but I am one to have the failure, have the mistake, try to put distance between myself and that thing and move on. But I also give my space time to sometimes I have even said out loud, like, let me wallow in self-pity just for a little bit because mm-hmm. I need to mm-hmm. be here. I need yeah. to just wallow and cry and figure out like what has happened. So I don't even know where to start. Probably my biggest failure was my retail store that I've already talked about. Mm-hmm. I quit my job cold I planned a little bit to open this store. Like I was doing, you know, some things behind the scenes before I quit my job. But anyway, I opened this retail store that I thought was going to occupy a really unique space in the retail environment I was in, and it was a space for community, human connection, just like we've been talking about. It was a boutique where I sold goods from very small independent designers from all over the country, and a lot of the items in the store, whether it was clothing, gifts, accessories like jewelry, handbags, you know, gift cards. So gifts, accessories, or clothing, it was all very unique. If not one of a kind, it was a few of a kind. So it was a beautiful store. I made it look attractive. It got a lot of attention because I could tell a really good story around the store. The storytelling mm-hmm. came so easy. Small, independent designers who aren't selling their goods anywhere else are here. You can touch it and feel it and experience the thing in person rather than shopping online. But also the store, I named it Henrietta Fahrenheit, and people were like, what the hell is that? Oh, it was a chicken on our family farm. My little sister, her job was to care for the chickens. She named them all. And I always said, if I have to have a pseudonym for some reason, it's going to be Henrietta Fahrenheit, which was a name she came up with a chicken. In hindsight, I realize it totally sounds like a kind of a stripper name. But at the time, everyone like glommed onto that, you know, oh, it was a chicken on the family farm. So there were always stories to tell. There were also stories to tell around my customer. Oh, you must have a very edgy, unique customer base. Nope. It was all, I mean, yes, it, or I guess people went to your customer base must be like young college age people. No, it was all about mindset. People who were very attracted to showing their independent streak through the products they bought. And that could have been anyone from a young person to, I had a customer who was like 90 years old and would like was some kind of greeter at a retail store and would save her paychecks to come and buy something special for herself every chance she could. I know, it was amazing.
I love her. I love her.
I loved her too. I loved her. So I had great, you know, a great story to tell. I was interviewed by the media all the time. I spoke at Jennifer Granholm's Cool Cities Conference. I was covered by Elle Girl magazine, Lucky magazine. Newspapers across the country would pick up my interviews on the AP wire and publish whatever. So I had national coverage. I had people contacting me from all over the United States to say, oh, I've heard about your store. You know, when I'm in Michigan, I'm going to come visit. So the storytelling was there. Guess what wasn't there? Sales, revenue, money. I was hemorrhaging money left and right. I was like, my personal debt was just increasing by the minute. It was incredible. And by the time I closed, I was well into the six figures of personal debt. And my house, like the ceiling was falling apart, the roof causing the ceiling to cave in. Just everything was going wrong. I couldn't keep up. I couldn't keep up. I even tried to go back to full-time work. So I hired a couple part-time employees thinking, okay, they can work between opening and 5 p.m. and then I'll come in at 5 every day after work and I'll work on Saturdays and I'll have an employee work on Sunday. And my salary, even though it was low, I was like, that can help me supplement some of the expense of the store, some of what's going on at home. That didn't work. I tried to move locations to a busier place. That didn't work either. And ultimately, I had to close the store. And so part of the failure is having to close a business that I had nurtured and babied for several years. Part of the failure, and I think the biggest one too, is that no one knew the difficult time I was having because I was all like, you know, glitter and shine and lights and national attention and everything. So when people would interview me about the store, they would always ask, how is business? And in the back of my mind, I was thinking, no one wants to be part of a sinking ship. So in order to keep my business afloat, I have to make it sound great. But I'm also a very truthful person. So I never went to the money as my answer. I always said, you know what? I hear from people all over the country about this store. I'm getting national attention. You know, I went through all the stuff I just told you. So when it was time to close and I had to put a press release out to the media, people were stunned. They were in shock because everyone thought that my business was making it because of the stories I had told about it. And I remember I was devastated. I fired all my employees like in one fell swoop, changed the locks on the door, just sold everything, you know, fixtures, inventory, everything. And I remember on the last night of having, you know, the store, the keys to the store, I was outside scraping the vinyl sign off the window. And someone walked by and said, "Wait a minute, you're closing?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, No. "I love your store. I love it. I followed you from your first location to here. I absolutely love your store. I'm so sad you're closing." And I was like, "Oh, thank you for telling me that." And then she said, "I mean, I didn't buy anything. I just loved looking around. It was like a museum." And it was like mic drop. And yeah. I thought, yeah, lady, you don't get a say. I can't, this isn't a museum, it's a business. So I closed. I went into a deep depression. I didn't know what I was doing with myself. I was devastated. So I sat with that. I was so broke. Thank God I had gotten my job, you know, to pay for the employees, because the store is closed. Okay, I still have my job. So I would go to work, but then I was saddled with this 6-digit debt that I had to pay. I had no help from, you know, anyone. My sister, the one who named the chicken Henrietta Fahrenheit, she called me and she said, "What can I do for you?" And I said, "I don't know." And she said, "Why don't I have one of those 0% interest credit card applications. Why don't I at least get that and put you as a co whatever?" Mm-hmm. And that way you can transfer some of your debt at 0% interest. And that could help you pay it off. And I did that. And then I created a plan. I was like, I am going to pay this debt off. I am going to pay it off in 5 years. And I am going to work hard to do this because I've got to get rid of all the baggage that I have with this store. So I did set up that plan. I also, because of that debt plan, that was my own plan. I made it myself. I was very strict about what I would allow myself to do. This is going to sound so sad, but I want your listeners to understand that, you know, how deep the sadness goes and how you can still get, oh my gosh, I'm about to cry, how you can work your way out of it.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I would do for fun on the weekends is I would go to Target and push a cart around and look at all the new things that Target had. But I would not allow myself to buy anything. Couldn't afford it. The only entertainment I had, it was back when Netflix was still like sending DVDs in the mail. I allowed myself to keep that subscription. So I would watch movies and send them back. And I would walk around Target by myself looking at new items, not buying anything. And it was, I cannot tell you the number of times I just would like lie in bed crying, understanding how people reach the point of devastation in their life around finance and money, where they don't want to go on. I wanted to go on, but I certainly understood where people were coming from. It was that bad. I was floating around without a purpose. So what happened next is a group of vendors from my store who happened to be local, they started reaching out to me and they reached out to me because of me. I put together a group of local vendors. This was probably starting a couple months before I closed my store, actually. I put a call out to some local vendors and I said, hey, y'all, you're all asking me the same exact question about your own business. Why don't I invite you in and do like group discussions where I answer your questions all at once, like a one to many instead of meet one to one, same question. So we started meeting on a monthly basis. And we continued to meet after my store closed, answering one question per meeting, like, what is the best tax strategy for a creative? What is the best website situation? You know, on and on. We ran out of topics and we together decided, why don't we do some kind of event? And that's when we co-founded an interactive arts fair. And in that moment, even though my store by now had been closed for months, I would cry in public. I would do my Target looking around.
Yeah.
I suddenly had an activity that was community focused and bounded me. I don't know if that's the right word. Binded me to some very, like vendors who were becoming close friends. And so me and these four other people co-founded an interactive arts fair that ran twice a year for 7 years. And it was hardcore. It was so much fun. So that was a good distraction. And, you know, then I just continued on, with my life. And so I actually wrote a post on LinkedIn about like, I failed and closed a business. This is what I learned. And
yeah,
some of those learnings are, and this is first and foremost, a failure is never total. So in this whole long ass story that I just told you, you will hear that I had national coverage from magazines. I was invited to speak at a governor's conference. I was this, I was that. The failure part was money and sales and revenue. Okay, so my business wasn't successful in that category, but I was successful in other ways. So failure is never total. So you need to remember what parts of the thing you did have success with and realize where that came from. That's number one. Number two, sitting with your failure is okay. Reflect on that. Understand, you know, after the moment, you're not going to understand in the moment, but in the moment, sit with your failure and be like have empathy for others who have failed. That's because now you get it. Now you get it. And then after you sit for a while, if you can have a passion project that can be a little distracting and refocusing, and not only distracting and refocusing, but teach you your brain, which has now gone through a chemical restructuring, like you could live in that failure forever. You need to readjust that chemical reaction that your brain has had. So if you can think of a passion project to distract and refocus, what it's also going to do is retrain your brain. Oh, wait, I'm not a failure. I can do these other things. So those are kind of my key takeaways from that experience. But
yeah,
gosh, whenever I see people on LinkedIn, and it happens quite a bit where they're closing their business or failing, I understand it. And the only thing I can tell them is you are going to grow into something greater and better after. And that's, you know, in this moment, it's just words, but believe me now, or hear me now, believe me later, and come later when that belief is reinforced.
Yeah. Yeah. First of all, it's such a powerful story for so many reasons. And I want to touch on just a little bit. You're talking about being in that place of real desperation and sort of this, you know, when am I going to get out of this? I went through a very tough financial crisis myself in my 20s, where I had a house that I had taken on. And, you know, frankly, I was never able to afford it. But there I was with a house. And shortly after having it, I had taken a risk. I wanted to work for a magazine. I took a risk, quit my full-time job, went to a magazine that was a part-time position. But I really believed in myself to, you know, like that I was going to make it. It was right before the 08 crash. And so a lot of people were laid off. This particular company does it often. And so it wasn't, you know, I didn't know that at the time, but now I know that that's kind of a pattern that they have. So there I am, you know, in this place of everything bills is like at least a month behind, if not 2 months behind. I have bill collectors calling every hour on the hour. I'm getting 25 to 30 voice messages daily from people who all wanted what I didn't have, which was money to pay for the bills and everything that I was responsible for. And I was, you know, trying to keep foreclosure at bay. And I remember, you know, that I was in this particular place where the furnace and the AC goes out, and it's in the middle of the summer. So it's the hottest part of the year. It's 94 degrees in the house. I have this tiny window air conditioner that I put in the kitchen because where the bedrooms were, like that was really kind of the only place that that window unit could be. And so I'm, you know, on this air mattress, sleeping on the floor with my dog in the only place that's like relatively cool in the house. And I have no idea how I'm going to pay for the furnace to get replaced because the agencies and such that help people with that kind of thing, I made too much money. But then also my credit was so shot that there was no way that I could go and like get a loan or anything like that. And I just remember one night lying there and the tears are just seeping into my pillow. And I'm thinking to myself, like, you know, I'm in my 20s. My peers are all out. You know, this is the prime of their life for dating and socializing. And I am so saddled financially that I don't actually know like how I'm going to get out of this. And it was like, you know, you had so many things that you're juggling. And if you dropped one ball over here, it opened a whole can of worms over here. And I'm like writing checks to the grocery store to, you know, that really technically the money wasn't there yet, but I had to keep the lights on. I had to keep my dog fed. And it was such a trying time. And there were so many moments where I really was like, I don't actually know how I'm going to get out of this. Like, I don't know where the end is not in sight. I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I'm literally doing everything that I can think of to get out of this. And that persisted for, you know, I mean, really in all reality, the total time was 8 or 9 years. I mean, I'm still to this day, like probably dealing with some ramifications, but obviously like things got better over the years. But my point in sharing all that is that those moments of desperation where you're really like, I don't actually know if there's a way out of this, can be very all-consuming. And so I'd love to know from your perspective, like, what did you do specifically? Can you remember, like, what was it that you did to help yourself mentally and emotionally? Because that's a very hard place to get out of. What a cliffhanger. I know. I don't mean to leave you hanging, but you'll have to tune in next week for part two of my conversation with Jennifer, where she reveals how she dug out of $115,000 in personal debt that she paid off in just 5 years. We also play a fun game together of fail or no fail. And we end with some more rapid fire questions, which are my favorite. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time for more silly shenanigans on French Kissing Life. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the French Kissing Life podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. If you're enjoying the show, shower us with a 5-star rating and hit that subscribe button to make sure you never miss a future episode. And if you would be so kind and give the show a review, I'll sweeten the deal for you. Since you know I live for good conversation, I want to hear from you. Share your favorite takeaways, an aha moment you had, or a fun emoji that represents this week's show, along with your Instagram handle or email address, and you'll be entered to win this month's giveaway. The French Kissing Life movement is gaining momentum, and your ratings and reviews play a pivotal role in propelling the show to new heights. Until next week, mwah!